All right, a slave cannot be a soldier and a conqueror fighting to be free. Welcome, everybody. Pastor Eli James here. Again, this is Eurofolk Radio. And today, our concluding show, Voice of Christian Israel, with our guest host, Ted Midward. How are you doing, Ted?
Hey, good afternoon, Pastor Eli. I hope you're doing all right. Hope you're doing better, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I'm doing slightly better, actually. Certainly better than last week and during the week. So, yeah, I'm hoping by next weekend I'll be pretty much fully recovered from this ailment I've got. But in any case, yeah, so let's continue. We were talking about the way in which Abraham Lincoln tried his absolute best to get the blacks out of America, even during the midst of the Civil War. And we'll turn it over to you, and please pick it up for us.
Sure. We are moving on to, I believe this is a fourth part of what we started with Abraham Lincoln and his true position on race, slavery, emancipation, and repatriation of American blacks. Mm-hmm. And this is the first little topic that we've gotten into on this bigger issue of the Civil War. And I know people are listening saying, why aren't you talking about this? Why aren't you talking about that? We will get there. We're taking our time, and we are reading an article by Robert Morgan, which is on the Institute for Historical Review. If you want to punch in his name, it's Robert Morgan, but it's about Lincoln, the issue of race, and this myth of Lincoln being the great emancipator. So we're going to move on to the fourth installment of this today. I'm going to continue reading, and this will probably take us through we might finish up with this. We might continue on, but there's still a bit to go. And, you know, I was gathering up little facts and quotes here and there, and I found this article, and this pretty much nails everything. So this was like the easiest way to go about it. So if we just stick to this and carry it through, and you guys listen and take notes, you're going to be shocked. I think where we ended up last week on part three, maybe the last 5-10 minutes, I read a part of the article about Lincoln and his White House meeting with the freed black men, and I believe Frederick Douglass was in attendance, but he gives this speech to the blacks that, you know, we're different. You guys suffer in our presence. We suffer in your presence. It'd all be better if we went our separate ways, and we'll help you get back to your own land somewhere, either in the Caribbean or Africa. So this was Abraham Lincoln's his project, and unfortunately, his project died with him. It seems
It did.
So,
although let me just say one,
we'll
quick
get more
thing.
Into the details.
Yeah,
sure.
What's his Johnson, his vice president, actually tried to maintain Lincoln's policy even after his death, but the radical abolitionists of the Northeast were just totally opposed to a peaceful transition back to white rule in the South, and so they did everything to undermine Johnson and Lincoln's policy. Back to you.
Yeah, Andrew Johnson's an interesting character. I was reading a book from the John Birchers that had some of that information. I guess Andrew Johnson went on like a speaking tour and started spilling some of the beans about what really happened with the Civil War and the agenda afterward for Reconstruction. And he was a critic of it. And I guess they moved against him to impeach him to get him out of there as a result. So he's interesting. There's also a tidbit about Ulysses S. Grant in the, I guess, later in the late 1870s, he becomes president. And there were a couple ideas involving Haiti and the Dominican Republic about sending blacks there, but that didn't pan out. So,
yeah, too bad.
I will continue on with the article here.
Yeah. Okay. Proclamation limitation.
We left off last time with this historic White House meeting where Lincoln gives a speech to these freed black men and pretty much tells them, you got to go. We got to be separate. There's no two ways about it. So we're going to move on in the article. This next section is about him organizing black support. So here we go.
Okay. What's the title?
The next day, Reverend Mitchell, the title of this part is Organizing Black Support.
Oh, okay. Very good.
And we're going to backtrack a little bit from the last maybe a couple paragraphs, but I'll go back over it to for listeners that are tuning in. So the next day, Reverend Mitchell, who had attended the historic White House meeting as Lincoln's Commissioner of Immigration, placed an advertisement in Northern newspapers announcing, "Correspondence is desired with colored men favorable to Central America, Liberian or Haitian immigration, especially the first named." Mitchell also sent a memorandum to black ministers urging them to use their influence to encourage immigration. Providence itself, he wrote, had decreed a separate existence for the races. Blacks were half responsible for the terrible Civil War, Mitchell went on, and further forecast further bloodshed unless they left the country. He concluded saying this, "This is a nation of equal white laborers, and as you cannot be accepted on equal terms, there is no place here for you. You cannot go into the North or the West without arousing the growing feeling of hostility towards you. The South must also have a homogeneous population, and any attempt to give the freedmen equal status in the South will bring disaster to both races."
Okay.
Reverend Edwin Thomas, the chairman of the black delegation, informed the president in a letter of August 16th that while he had originally opposed colonization, after becoming acquainted with the facts, he now favored it. He asked Lincoln's authorization to travel among his black friends and co-workers to convince them of the virtues of emigration. While Thompson continued working on colonization of the Chiriquis site, Lincoln turned to Kansas Senator Samuel Pomeroy, whom he appointed United States colonization agent, to recruit black emigrants for the Chiriquis resettlement and arranged for their transportation. On August 26, 1862, Pomeroy issued a dramatic official appeal, quote, "to the colored free people of the United States," and it said this, "The hour has now arrived in the history of your settlement upon this continent when it is within your own power to take one step that will secure, if successful, the elevation, freedom, and social position of your race upon the American continent. I want mechanics and laborers, earnest, honest, and sober men, for the interest of a generation, it may be of mankind, are involved in the success of this experiment, and with the approbation of the American people, under the blessing of Almighty God, it cannot, it shall not fail. Although many blacks soon made clear their unwillingness to leave the country, Pomeroy was pleased to report in October that he had received nearly 14,000 applications from blacks who desired to emigrate. On September 12, 1862, the federal government concluded a provisional contract with Ambrose Thompson, providing for development and colonization of his vast leased holdings in the Chiriquis region. Pomeroy was to determine the fitness of the Chiriquis site for resettlement, along with the signatures of Thompson and Interior Secretary Caleb Smith. The contract contained a note by the president saying this, "Within contract is approved, and the Secretary of the Interior is directed to execute the same," signed A. Lincoln. That same day, Lincoln also issued an order directing the Department of the Interior to carry out the, quote, "colonization provisions" of the relevant laws of April and July 1862. The president next instructed Pomeroy, acting as his agent, to accompany the proposed colonizing expedition. Lincoln authorized him to advance Thompson $50,000 when and if colonization actually began, and to allow Thompson such sums as might immediately be necessary for incidental expenses. Interior Secretary Smith sent Pomeroy more specific instructions. He was to escort a group of black freedmen who were willing to resettle abroad. However, before attempting to establish a colony at Chiriqui, no matter how promising the site, he should first obtain permission of the local authorities and in order to prevent diplomatic misunderstandings. Acting on these instructions, Pomeroy went to New York to obtain a ship for the venture. Robert Murray, the United States Marshal at New York, was advised of Pomeroy's status as special colonization agent and was asked to help him secure a suitable ship. On September 16th, Interior Secretary Smith wired Pomeroy saying this, "President wants information. Has Murray the control and custody of the vessel? Is there order of sale, and if so, when? Is any deposit necessary to get the vessel?" President Lincoln's concern with black resettlement at this time is all the more significant because September 1862 was a very critical period for Union military fortunes. In spite of this, he took time to keep himself abreast of the project, even to the point of having a telegram sent to hurry the procurement of a ship for the venture.
Now, isn't it fascinating that the history books are totally silent about this episode of the Lincoln administration?
Right, right. And if I may add in, I think it's common knowledge that the first 2 years of the war, 1861 and 1862, did not go well for the North, for the Union forces, right, for Lincoln. So
amen.
The fact that he is taking attention away from the war effort when the chips are seemingly down is quite telling, isn't it?
Yeah. Means he's committed to the project, right? If only had been allowed to complete the project. Yeah, okay.
So now we're moving on to the Emancipation Proclamation. During the winter and spring of 1861 to 1862, public support grew rapidly for the view that slavery must be abolished everywhere. Lincoln did not ignore the ever louder calls for decisive action. On June 19th, he signed a law abolishing slavery in all the federal territories. At the same time, he was quietly preparing an even more dramatic measure. At a cabinet meeting on July 22nd, Lincoln read out the draft text of a document he had prepared, a proclamation that would give the Confederate States 100 days to stop their, quote, rebellion upon threat of declaring all slaves in those states to be free. The president told his cabinet that he did not want advice on the merits of the proclamation itself. He had made up his mind about that, he said, but he would welcome suggestions about how to best implement the edict. For 2 days, cabinet members debated the draft. Only two, Secretary of State William Seward and Treasury Secretary Salmon Chase, abolitionists who had challenged Lincoln for the 1816 Republican presidential nomination, agreed even in part with the proclamation's contents. Seward persuaded the president not to issue it until after a Union military victory, of which so far there had been few, or otherwise it would appear the last measure of an exhausted government, a cry for help. Union General McClellan's success on September 17th in holding off the forces of General Lee at Antietam provided a federal victory of sorts and the awaited for opportunity. 5 days later, Lincoln issued his preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, which included a favorable reference to colonization. Mm-hmm. Here is text from the draft. "I, Abraham Lincoln, do hereby proclaim and declare that hereafter, as heretofore, the war will be prosecuted for the object of practically restoring the constitutional relation between the United States and each of the states and the people thereof. That it is my purpose, upon the next meeting of Congress, to again recommend the adoption of a practical measure tendering pecuniary aid to the free acceptance or rejection of all slave states, so called, the people whereof may not be then in rebellion against the United States, and which states may then have voluntarily adopted or thereafter may voluntarily adopt immediate or gradual abolishment of slavery within their respective limits, and that the effort to colonize persons of African descent with their consent upon this continent or elsewhere with the previously obtained consent of the governments existing there will be continued. Okay, Lincoln then Ted, went on.
Yeah, hold on. So, go ahead. Has there been any word so far in this document about offering the blacks the franchise to vote in any of the states surviving the Civil War? Because I don't think he offered that. So his intention was on reestablishing white rule in all of the southern states that, as they came back into the Union.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Lincoln then went on to state that on January 1st, 1863, that all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of a state, the people whereof shall then be in rebellion against the United States, shall be then, thenceforth, forever free. The edict then cited the law passed by Congress on March 13, 1862, which prohibited military personnel from returning escaped slaves, and the Second Confiscation Act of July 1862. The proclamation's limitations. On New Year's Day, 1863, Lincoln issued the final Emancipation Proclamation. Contrary to what its title suggests, however, the presidential edict did not immediately free a single slave. It freed only slaves who were under Confederate control and explicitly exempted slaves in Union-controlled territories, including federal-occupied areas of the Confederacy, West Virginia, and the four slaveholding states that remained in the Union. The proclamation, Secretary Seward Riley commented, emancipated slaves where it could not reach them, and left them in bondage where it could have set them free.
Very good.
Moreover, because it was issued as a war measure, the proclamation's long-term validity was uncertain. Apparently, any future president could simply revoke it. And here's a quote from historian Alan Nevins. He says, "The popular picture of Lincoln using a stroke of the pen to lift the shackles from the limbs of 4 million slaves is ludicrously false." So, yes, like I kind of mentioned before, the war wasn't going so well for the North the first 2 years. The chips were down. They had to do something. And Lincoln kind of figures, well, if I can do this, if I can sow chaos in the South and declare that these slaves are free, maybe Robert E. Lee, maybe Stonewall Jackson, maybe Jeb Stuart and all their men will abandon the battlefield and tend to matters back at home where chaos ensues. Maybe I can stir these blacks up and use that to my advantage in the war.
Right. That may be his plan. However, I think Abraham Lincoln was more paving into international pressure because the world community, which was totally anti-slavery, and the czars had begun liberating the serfs, the French serfs were being liberated, the German serfs were being liberated, and the world was looking at America. How come there's still slaves in America, right? And the popular support from the people of Britain, for example, in favor of ending slavery was so great that the their governments could really not go against it. So it was for Lincoln, it was more of a move to settle down the international community and to just tell them, hey, I'm serious about this. It's going to happen. Don't worry. One of these days, slavery will be ended. Okay, back to you.
Right. Well, you are absolutely correct. This was a move on the international stage to garner support. And I suppose we'll see more about that when we talk about Lincoln and the Russian Tsar coming to his aid to save the Union.
Right.
You had mentioned them freeing the serfs. This was a move that was just undertaken, I believe, in Russia. So we'll see more about that when we get to that material later on. So excellent point.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, moving on. This next section of the article is entitled Military Necessity. Lincoln himself specifically cited military necessity as his reason for issuing the Emancipation Proclamation. After more than a year of combat, and in spite of its great advantages in industrial might and numbers, federal forces had still not succeeded in breaking the South. At this critical juncture of the war, the president apparently now hoped a formal edict abolishing slavery in the Confederate states would strike a blow at the Confederacy's ability to wage war by encouraging dissension, escapes, and possibly revolt among its large slave labor force. As the war progressed, black labor had become ever more critical in the hard-pressed Confederacy. Blacks planted, cultivated, and harvested the food that they then transported to the Confederate armies. Blacks raised and butchered the beef, pigs, and chickens used to feed the Confederate troops. They wove the cloth and knitted the socks to clothe the gray uniformed soldiers. As Union armies invaded the South, tearing up railroads and demolishing bridges, free blacks and slaves repaired them. They toiled in the South's factories, shipping yards, and mines. In 1862, the famous Tredegar Iron Works advertised for 1,000 slaves.
Wow.
In 1864, there were 4,301 blacks and 2,518 whites in the iron mines of the Confederate states east of the Mississippi. Blacks also served with the Confederate military forces as mechanics, teamsters, and common laborers. They cared for the sick and scrubbed the wounded in Confederate hospitals. Nearly all the South's military fortifications were constructed by black laborers. Most of the cooks in the Confederate Army were slaves. Of the 400 workers at the Naval Arsenal in Selma, Alabama in 1865, 310 were blacks. Blacks served with the crews of the Confederate blockade runners and stoked the fire rooms of the South's warships. Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest, the legendary cavalry commander, said in a post-war interview, quote, "When I entered the Army, I took 47 Negroes into the Army with me, and 45 of them surrendered with me. These boys stayed with me, drove my teams, and better Confederates did not live." End
wow.
quote.
Okay.
On several occasions, Lincoln explained his reasons for issuing the proclamation. On September 13, 1862, the day after the preliminary proclamation was issued, Lincoln met with a delegation of pro-abolitionist Christian ministers and told them bluntly, quote, "Understand, I raise no objections against it," that being slavery, "on legal or constitutional grounds. I view the matter of emancipation as a practical war measure to be decided upon according to the advantages or disadvantages it may offer to the suppression of the rebellion," end quote. To Salmon Chase, his Treasury Secretary, the president justified the proclamation's limits. "The original preliminary proclamation has no constitutional or legal justification, except as a military measure," he explained. "The exceptions were made because the military necessity did not apply to the exempted localities, nor does that necessity apply to them now any more than it did then." Horace Greeley, editor of the influential New York Tribune, called upon the president to immediately and totally abolish slavery in an emphatic and prominently displayed editorial published on August 20, 1862. Lincoln responded in a widely quoted letter, saying this, "My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union, and is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps save the Union. Concern about growing sentiment in the North to end slavery, along with sharp criticism from prominent abolitionists, was apparently another motivating factor for the president. And it has, in parentheses here, abolitionists even feared that the Confederate states might give up their struggle for independence before the January 1st deadline and thus preserve the institution of slavery.
Okay. And but they didn't want the war to end? No, let's not have an end to the war. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Crazy.
Lincoln assured Edward Stanley, a pro-slavery Southerner, that he had appointed as military governor of the occupied North Carolina coast, that the proclamation had become a civil necessity to prevent the radicals from openly embarrassing the government in the conduct of the war.
Okay.
Now we move on to the impact of the proclamation. While abolitionists predictably hailed the final proclamation, sentiment among Northern whites was generally unfavorable. The edict cost the president considerable support and undoubtedly was a factor in Republican Party setbacks in the congressional elections of 1862. In the Army, hardly one Union soldier in 10 approved of emancipation, and some officers resigned in protest. As a work of propaganda, the proclamation proved effective. To encourage discontent among slaves in the Confederacy, 1 million copies were distributed in the Union-occupied South, and, as hoped, news of it spread rapidly by word of mouth among the Confederacy's slaves, arousing hopes of freedom and encouraging many to escape. The proclamation had the desired effect of creating confusion in the South and depriving the Confederacy of much of its valuable laboring force. And that this is said by historian John Hope Franklin. Finally, in the eyes of many people, particularly in Europe, Lincoln's edict made the Union Army a liberating force. All slaves in areas henceforth coming under federal control would be automatically free. The proclamation greatly strengthened support for the Union cause abroad, especially in Britain and France, where anti-slavery sentiment was strong. In Europe, the edict transformed the conflict into a Union crusade for freedom and contributed greatly to dashing the Confederacy's remaining hopes of formal diplomatic recognition from Britain and France.
Go ahead, Eli. Yeah, you can see the strategic value of the proclamation in Europe and how it affected, let's say, support for the South in Europe. Affected it tremendously. All right, back to you.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. General Marxism was all the rage spreading through Europe around this era, right?
That's right. Yes, it was. Okay.
So, the Emancipation Proclamation, reported Henry Adams from London, has done more for us, the Union, here than all our former victories and all our diplomacy. It is creating an almost convulsive reaction in our favor all over this country.
Wow.
Okay.
End of the resettlement efforts. Lincoln continued to press ahead with his plan to resettle blacks in Central America, in spite of opposition from all but one member in his own cabinet, and the conclusion of a scientific report that Chiriqui coal was, quote, worthless. Mounting opposition to any resettlement plan also came from abolitionists, who insisted that blacks had a right to remain in the land of their birth. In addition, some Republican Party leaders opposed resettlement because they were counting on black political support, which would be particularly important in controlling a defeated South where most whites would be barred from voting. Others agreed with Republican Senator Charles Sumner, who argued that black laborers were an important part of the national economy, and any attempt to export them would be fatal to the prosperity of the country.
Wow. We hear that today, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the Northern election campaign of November 1862, emancipation figured as a major issue. Violent mobs of abolitionists opposed those who spoke out in favor of resettlement.
Wow.
What proved decisive in bringing an end to the Chiriquis project, though, were emphatic protests by the republics that would be directly affected by large-scale resettlement. In Central America, the prospect that millions of blacks would soon be arriving provoked alarm. Mm-hmm. A sense of panic prevailed in Nicaragua and Honduras, the American consul had reported, because of fears of, quote, a dreadful deluge of Negro immigration from the United States, end quote. In August and September, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica protested officially to the American government about the resettlement venture. Objection from Costa Rica was particularly worrisome because that country claimed part of the Chiriquis territory controlled by Mr. Thompson. On September 19th, Envoy Luis Molina, a diplomat who represented the three Central American states, formally explained to American officials the objections of the three countries against the resettlement plan. This venture, he protested, was an attempt to use Central America as a depository for a plague of which the United States desired to rid themselves. Molina also reminded Seward that for the USA to remain faithful to its own Monroe Doctrine, it could no more assume that there were lands available in Latin America for colonization than could a European power. The envoy concluded his strong protest by hinting that the republics he represented were prepared to use force to repel what they interpreted as an invasion.
Wow.
Learn.
You don't want our blacks? What's the matter with you people?
Learning later that the resettlement project was still underway, Molina delivered a second formal protest on September 29th. Secretary of State William Seward was not able to ignore such protests. After all, why should Central Americans be happy to welcome people of a race that was so despised in the United States? Accordingly, on October 7th, 1862, Seward prevailed on the president to call a, quote, temporary halt to the Chiriquis project. Thus, the emphatic unwillingness of the Central American republics to accept black migrants dealt the decisive blow to the Chiriquis project. At a time when the Union cause was still precarious, Secretary of State Seward was obliged to show special concern for U.S. relations with Latin America.
Okay. An unsolvable problem, is it not?
Right. Okay. If you listen to the liberals and Jews and blacks, you would think they'd be a national asset, and everyone would be shoving another out of the way to receive them first.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Moving on to the next section here, this is Lincoln proposes a constitutional amendment. In spite of such obstacles, Lincoln reaffirmed his strong support for gradual emancipation coupled with resettlement in his second annual message to Congress of December 1st, 1862. On this occasion, he used the word deportation. So serious was he about his plan that he proposed to draft a constitutional amendment to give it the greatest legal sanction possible. Lincoln told Congress the following: I cannot make it better known than it already is that I strongly favor colonization. In this view, I recommend the adoption of the following resolution and articles amendatory to the Constitution of the United States. Congress may appropriate money and otherwise provide for colonizing free colored persons with their consent at any place or places without the United States. applications have been made to me by many free Americans of African descent to favor their emigration with a view to such colonization as was contemplated in recent acts of Congress. Several of these Spanish American republics have protested against the sending of such colonies or settlers to their respective territories. Liberia and Haiti are, as yet, the only countries to which colonists of African descent from here could go with certainty of being received and adopted as citizens. Their old masters will gladly give them wages, at least until new laborers can be procured. And the freed men, in turn, will gladly give their labor for the wages, till new homes can be found for them in congenial climes and with people of their own blood and race. Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves.
Well, they tried to erase this portion of history, but we're remembering it. All right.
The president's December 1862 proposal had five basic elements. Number one, because slavery was a domestic institution and thus the concern of the states alone, they, and not the federal government, were to voluntarily emancipate the slaves. Number two, slaveholders would be fully compensated for their loss. Number three, the federal government would assist the states with bonds as grants and aid in meeting the financial burden of compensation. Number four, emancipation would be carried out gradually. The states would have until the year 1900 to free their slaves.
No, that's a long time.
Yeah. Number five, the freed blacks would be resettled outside the United States.
Yeah, back to Africa. Okay.
Right. It's not always the case because people complain about eminent domain and not getting the fair value for their property they're forced to give up by the government. But slaveholders would be fully compensated for their loss, as was the case in 1830s Britain. Now, the radical abolitionists, they did not favor any compensation whatsoever. So important detail to point out.
Amen. Thank you.
Okay. The Ile Avachi Project, and I'm sure I'm butchering this name, but Ile Avachi, that's what I'm going with. With the collapse of the Chiriquee Plan, Lincoln next gave serious consideration to a small Caribbean island off the coast of the Black Republic of Haiti, Ile Avachi, as a possible resettlement site for freed blacks. In December 1862, the president signed a contract with Bernard Koch, a businessman who had said that he had obtained a long-term lease on the island. Koch agreed to settle 5,000 blacks on the island and to provide them with housing, food, medicine, churches, schools, and employment at a cost to the government of $50 each. About 450 blacks were accordingly transported to the island at federal government expense, but the project was not a success. As a result of poor organization, corruption, and Haitian government opposition, about 100 of the deportees soon died of disease, thirst, and starvation. In February and March of 1864, a government-chartered ship brought the survivors back to the United States. After that, Congress canceled all funds it had set aside for black resettlement.
Oh, well.
Moving on to the next section, this is the end of resettlement efforts.
Okay.
In early 1863, Lincoln discussed with his Register of the Treasury a plan to remove the whole colored race of the slave states into Texas.
Oh, my goodness.
Apparently, nothing came of the discussion.
Okay.
Hard-pressed by the demands of the war situation and lacking a suitable resettlement site or even strong support within his own inner circle, Lincoln apparently gave up on specific resettlement efforts. On July 1st, 1864, Presidential Secretary John Hay wrote in his diary, I am happy that the president has sloughed off the idea of colonization. Whatever its merits, the notion that America's racial question could be solved by massive resettlement of the black population probably never had much realistic prospect of success, given the realities of American life. Writing in the Journal of Negro History, historian Paul Sheeps sums this up, saying this: "Large-scale colonization of Negroes could only have succeeded, if it could have succeeded at all, if the nation had been willing to make the gigantic propaganda, diplomatic, administrative, transportation, and financial effort that would have been required. As it was, according to historian Carl Sandburg, in a way, nobody cared. But even had hundreds of thousands of Negroes been colonized, the nation's race problem would not have been solved."
Yep, it certainly hasn't been, right?
Right, that's an understatement, yeah.
Right, now, of course, this was all being done in the midst of a civil war, which made it exceptionally difficult. You know, if it had been peacetime, maybe, right? But not during the war.
Right. And yeah, and if Lincoln could have survived, I think it really had a shot.
It would have happened, yes, it would have.
Moving on to the next section, this is abolishing slavery. A 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which would prohibit prohibit slavery throughout the United States, was passed by the Senate on April 8, 1864. Because the House failed immediately to approve it with the necessary two-thirds majority vote, Lincoln, in his annual message of December 6th, asked the House to reconsider it. On January 31, 1865, and with three votes to spare, the House approved it. By this time, slavery had already been abolished in Arkansas, Louisiana, Maryland, and Missouri, and a similar move seemed imminent in Tennessee and Kentucky. On February 3, 1865, Lincoln and Secretary of State Seward met with a Confederate peace delegation that included Confederate Vice President Alexander Stephens. Lincoln told the delegation that he still favored compensation to owners of emancipated slaves. It had never been his intention, the president said, to interfere with slavery in the states. He had been driven to it by necessity. He believed that the people of the North and South were equally responsible for slavery. If hostilities ceased and the states voluntarily abolished slavery, he believed the government would indemnify the owners to the extent, possibly, of $400 million. Although the conference was not fruitful, 2 days later, Lincoln presented to his cabinet a proposal to appropriate $400 million for reimbursement to slave owners, providing hostilities stopped by April 1st. And it says in parentheses here, the cabinet unanimously rejected the proposal, which Lincoln then regretfully abandoned.
Man, you can't blame him for trying, right?
Right. Yeah, anyone who puts money where their mouth is, you got to respect it.
Right. Okay.
On April 9th, General Lee surrendered his army to General Grant at Appomattox Courthouse, and by the end of May, all the fighting had ceased. The Civil War was over. And another detail that goes unnoticed that I found rather interesting, you know, Jefferson Davis, he was the president of the Confederate forces, the commander-in-chief, and one of the little wrinkles in history is he did not authorize Robert E. Lee to surrender. Lee did that himself. Kind of interesting.
Okay, yeah. I'm tired of fighting, Chief. Sorry.
Right.
Okay, there you go.
Moving on to the next section, and this is going to be the final section here, it looks like. This is entitled Lincoln's Fear of a Race War. A short time before his death on April 15th, 1865, Lincoln met with General Benjamin F. Butler, who reported that the president spoke to him of exporting the blacks. And here's a bit of dialogue, so This might be a little confusing for me to read, but it's dialogue between Butler and Lincoln. So here we go. "But what shall we do with the Negroes after they're free?" Lincoln said. "I can hardly believe that the South and North can live in peace unless we can get rid of the Negroes. I believe that it would be better to export them all to some fertile country with a good climate, which they can have to themselves." Along with a request to Butler to look into the question of how to best use our very large navy to send the blacks away, the president laid bare his fears for the future. He said this: "If these black soldiers of ours go back to the South, I am afraid that they will be but little better off with their masters than they were before, and yet they will be free men. I fear a race war, and it will be at least a guerrilla war, because we have taught these men how to fight. There are plenty of men in the North who will furnish the Negroes with arms if there is any oppression of them by their late masters." To his dying day, it appears, Lincoln did not believe that harmony between white and black was feasible, and viewed resettlement of the blacks as the preferable alternative to race conflict. Although Lincoln believed in the destruction of slavery, concludes black historian Charles Wesley in an article of the Journal of the Negro History, he desired the complete separation of the whites and the blacks. Throughout his political career, Lincoln persisted in believing in the colonization of the Negro. Frederick Douglass, a gifted African-American writer and activist who knew Lincoln, characterized him in a speech delivered in 1876. He said this: "In his interest, in his association, in his habits of thought, and in his prejudices, he was a white man. He was preeminently the white man's president, entirely devoted to the welfare of the white man. He was ready and willing at any time during the first years of his administration to deny, postpone, and sacrifice the rights of humanity in the colored people to promote the welfare of the white people of this country." Allen Nevins, one of the century's most prolific and acclaimed historians of U.S. history, summed up Lincoln's view of the complex issue of race and his vision of America's future. He said this: "His conception ran beyond the mere liberation of 4 million colored folk. It implied a far-reaching alteration of American society, industry, and government, a gradual planned emancipation, a concomitant transportation of hundreds of thousands and perhaps even millions of peoples overseas, a careful governmental nursing of the new colonies, and a payment of unprecedented sums to the section thus deprived of its old labor supply. This scheme carried unprecedented implications."
Yeah, now I can see that the colonization back to Africa would still work. Because, for one thing, most of those black republics, for lack of a better word, in Africa, you know, basically tribal leaders, they could be easily bribed, you know. And so you could set up towns in the middle of the jungle and export all the blacks there. And, you know, those bribes would be appreciated by the local black chieftains. There's no doubt that was possible. Okay, back to you.
I agree. Yeah, they would definitely go back with it if they could materially profit from it. I have no doubt about that. I agree.
Yes.
So we've got two more paragraphs, and that'll be the end of this. I will proceed on. Here we go. "To put this into effect would immensely increase the power of the national government and widen its abilities. If even partially practicable, it would mean a long step toward rendering the American people homogeneous in color and race, a rapid stimulation of immigration to replace the workers exported, a greater world position for the Republic, and a pervasive change in popular outlook and ideas. The attempt would do more to convert the unorganized country into an organized nation than anything yet planned. Impossible and undesirable, even if possible? Probably, but Lincoln continued to hold to his vision. For most Americans today, Lincoln's plan to solve America's vexing racial problem by resettling the blacks in a foreign country probably seems bizarre and utterly impractical, if not outrageous and cruel. At the same time, though, and particularly when considered in the context of the terrible Civil War that cost so many lives, it is worth pondering just why and how such a far-fetched plan was ever able to win the support of a leader of the stature and wisdom of Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
So there you go. That's the end of it.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious that had Lincoln been able to achieve his vision, all the racial strife we have in America would never have occurred. So his statement that the white and black races must remain separate and cannot live together, I agree with 100%, and history has borne him out to be correct.
Absolutely. I suppose I need to do a mea culpa and say Lincoln had very positive aspects. He wasn't just this evil tyrant like some of the Southern history that I've read. This would have been tremendous for the future of the country. I don't think we need to explain it to listeners here. I think they get it. So I will spare everybody explaining it. But absolutely, Abraham Lincoln deserves our praise for this. And we, Pastor Eli and myself, we're going to continue forward in maybe the next episode we'll get into a little bit. But Lincoln saves the Republic against the bankers, against the Rothschilds. Yeah. We will see that. And we're going to put to bed some of these myths that Abraham Lincoln was no good, that he was just a secret Canaanite trying to destroy the Southern people. A lot of the libertarian criticisms of Abraham Lincoln, how he prosecuted the war and suspended habeas corpus, those are probably fair criticisms. But we're going to bring a balanced perspective to it, and we're going to use the facts to do it. This isn't our opinion. We didn't roll out of bed and dream this up. We found this researching the topic. So we're going to bring that to you.
Yeah, he was definitely not the great emancipator that his history has falsely made him out to be, right? He had no interest in amalgamating the races, which others in history claim, even Southerners, especially the neo-Confederates, label him as an amalgamationist. He was not that ever, okay? That's wartime propaganda, and they're still continuing that wartime propaganda today. And that does a disservice. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sitting here thinking about this. So from what I've read, I guess it's what, 4 million, maybe 5 million African slaves that the South had. Is that correct, Eli?
Right, yeah, around there, yeah.
So what is the amount today? They're what, 12-13% of the national overall population? So 40,
drag on the
45
economy.
Million?
Yep.
Right. So they've 10x'd since the Civil War in numbers. Right. Is that fair to say? Is that accurate, you think?
What's the word, panx'd? I didn't get that word.
They have 10x'd their population.
Oh, 10 times.
Four,
okay, 10 times.
Roughly 4 million to, what, 40, 45, maybe even 50. I don't know what's the most accurate census numbers. But I mean, gosh, folks, do we really need to get into? I mean, look at every metro area, urban area, formerly white city, 50, 60 years ago. They're in ruins.
That's right. Thanks to the fact we have just too many blacks. If Abraham Lincoln had his way, all the racial strife we have today would be non-existent. All the Jews would have probably figured out some way of importing them back in here, as they have done by airplane, ship, and land, right? To bring non-whites into our country to destroy our country. The Jews would have figured a way to do that anyway, but it would not nearly be as bad as it is today.
Correct. I'll tell you what, for next time, I have lined up a selection from Andy Hitchcock's book, The Synagogue of Satan, that talks about the Civil War, Lincoln, the Rothschilds, and Russia, the Tsar. Was it Alexander II, I think? That'll take about one episode. I'll read through it. It'll take probably 30 minutes, and then we can comment on it the rest of the time, and then we can, from there – we can get into the real story behind the Civil War with all the players behind the scenes,
right,
and
the bankers,
really,
yeah.
Right, put the nail in the coffin to this whole thing. And we will continue to show
yeah.
Abraham Lincoln may not be the most evil man in American history once we get all the facts on the table. So,
oh, yeah. Okay.
We've got a couple minutes left here, Eli. Did you have any concluding remarks you want to wrap up with?
Well, I'm curious, because you had mentioned last time Eustace Mullins and his opinion on the Civil War. I don't know what book that was from. Maybe you could bring that into the equation next week as well.
Sure, yeah. He has a whole chapter on the Civil War in his book, The Curse of Canaan.
Well, he does.
And,
okay.
And I think he's pretty much on target, and I think there are questions to and discrepancies to Abraham Lincoln's true lineage. We don't really know, and a lot of people close to him, including his former law partner, Ward Lehman, I think was his name.
All right.
They thought he had some sort of either Negro or Jewish ancestry that was hidden and not in the popular view, public view.
So did Adolf Hitler.
Right. So they say.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I like Eustace Mullins a lot. I think he's correct.
Great.
With the books he's written. And, but I think it's fair. On the other hand, he didn't really touch any of Lincoln's true opinions like we've covered here. So,
right.
Well, I just
right.
want to be fair and put all the facts on the table. And people can make up their own minds once we get all the cards on the
absolutely.
Table.
Absolutely.
So.
We're not afraid to discuss any issue. And, you know, we'll take it from there. So, all right, fantastic. All right, Brother Ted, thanks for narrating. I think we really clarified Lincoln's true position on race and demystified his position on that score. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, Pastor Nipson. We will all see you next time next week. Thank you, Ted. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Pastor Eli. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Eli, you still there?